check out those compass. Compact antennas. I'm by the recommended balance. The guy who makes the balance is in Texas. So I will give you the conversion 4-to-1 from ladder line to coax. And you use a short jumper of coax between the balance and the tuner. I've been doing it with great success. And like I said, as far as VHF, UHF, you want to get started, something simple. A diamond or a comet, if you set the dimensions properly, as per the instructions, use good coax, like LMR 400, I can't think of any of them. Times Wire, LMR 400, and it's the best way. When I first moved here, I had no antenna. I took a bubble whip. I used it as a pie plate, as a ground plate. And I got into Limog for my dining room.
Okay, Rich, I mean RG 230, is it 213? RG 213 is pretty good. I like LMR 400. Most of my equipment is wired together with LMR 400. The worst thing that I see occasionally are guys who have some ridiculous thing like 200 feet of RG 58. Going up to a 440 antenna. That's a crime. So I would agree with you that good coaxial cable is very important as well. And it sounds sort of like you agree with me as far as the UHF-VHF. Let me just ask anyone else out there if they have any questions or opinions about the UHF-VHF antenna. I thought we would kind of take HF as a completely separate entity because the UHF-VHF is kind of easy to answer, and the HF is going to be impossible to answer. But if anyone else has any comments about the UHF-VHF, please give me your call sign, your name.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu.
Yes, Rich.
I think we forgot the part of his question when he said money is no object. So what I hear is he's in business, or in the hobby, I should say, and money is no object. So I would call a Gigaparts or an HRO. I would get their catalogs or look online for their catalogs. And there aren't too many commercial antennas out there. I mean, there are enough to get a little bit confused about, but there aren't that many. And if money's no object, a lot of what's been tonight is for people on budgets, and he seems not to have budgets. So I think he could pick one of each pretty quickly after calling a couple of places and reading. Go ahead.
Well, I would agree with you, Rich, and I just thought that I would offer my 2 cents worth. Diamond and Comet seem to make most of the well-regarded base station UHF and VHF antennas these days. There are more expensive varieties that are better designed for repeaters that could be used as a base station, I guess. And there are other brands that have kind of gotten their fame back in the 60s and the 70s and haven't really done much since then that are still being sold in the catalogs. You know, I just got a HRO catalog the other day, and there's a large section on different antennas. But it's always good to point people at what I think at least is somewhere in the right direction, which is either the X series of Diamonds or the GP series of Comets.
I would also maybe advise him to get some multiband trapped dipole and hook one end to his chimney while he's up there mounting the other one, the UHF-VHF, and start off with that as for his HF antenna. Go ahead.
Okay, I mean, that's a good suggestion as well. But as I said before, because I could see going on and on and on or going nowhere with the discussion of HF, because Chris has kind of given the specifications for an HF antenna that would not be optimal in anyone's book. It is doable. It's just that it would be highly inefficient. And I thought we could go on about that for a while. And that kind of harkens back to Rich Antuio's comment about his folded dipole design, which is all well and good, except it doesn't really meet any of the criteria that Chris gave, as far as he seems to want a vertically polarized antenna. He wants one that's 10 feet long. And I believe the compact antenna that Antuio is using is significantly more than 10 feet. So it's going to be a problem fitting Chris's size requests for a good HF, but I thought that we could roll that around as well.
One more time, WB2HK.
Turning radius, if he was looking at Yagi's, I can't believe he's looking for a total length of 10 feet HF antenna. Maybe I'm wrong, and maybe that's why everybody's talking about verticals. Go back to that.
Yeah, Rich. Now, the way that he described it was 10 feet of vertical dimension and maximum of 6 feet horizontal, say, for ground planes. Chester wanted to say something. What do you want to say, Chester?
Okay, Roy, everybody. I think a spacey is allocated, is perfect for a Comet, a Diamond, dual bander, UHF, VHF antenna. Forget about rotators and beams and all that other kind of stuff. Keep it simple. We don't want to chase a new ham away. I was just sitting back and listening to all the different stories, and, you know, most of us are on this frequency, are hams for many, many years, and we experiment and so on, and we want to build things. But when you're taking somebody new that doesn't even have a license and feeding him with all kinds of different information, it's almost overwhelming, probably, to that person. And we don't want to chase him away from ham radio. Make it simple. Call up a company that supplies amateur radio antennas. Buy a good feed line. Buy a good feed line, your length that you need to get to your place where you're operating. Buy a commercial Diamond or Comet antenna. Attach it to someplace where you're going to mount it, and that's it. And buy a rig, and you're on the air. And after a year or two, you get your feet wet. Then, if you're interested, you go to the next step. But most of the things that I'm hearing are people who've been around and already have gone to the next step and beyond that, right?
I agree with you, Chester. Kludging is all well and good, and if you're inclined to be an experimenter, so be it. But that didn't strike me as Chris's way of looking at it. He wants to just kind of set something up that's been proven, that works, that's not a wee bit of a kludge, that doesn't really just kind of scream, gee, how clever I am. that kind of repurposes a design meant for either mobile or what have you. So we're in complete agreement, Chester. You keep it simple. The acronym, I believe, is KISS. So I thank you for that, Chester. Yes, Wesley.
Yeah, I found the antenna that was using years ago. It's being called HiQ antenna. Exactly like I say, HiQ antenna. HiQ antenna, and they have a different models. You could have HiQ4/160. Those are multi-band antennas with motorized coil. You can mount it anywhere you want. It works on the ground level, on your backyard. It works on your attic if you have it, a high attic, and it works on your roof. And that antenna requires some amount of foil in square footage that is put underneath of it, and you could operate with few bands quite well. Once you put it, you never revisit it. Yes, it is motorized. Instead of a typical structure, when you have an antenna and then you have a coaxial cable and antenna tuner right at where your rig is, you have that motor that changes the slider on the coil, and that serves as an antenna tuner. Let me drop it. Now, the advantage is that you don't have the losses usually associated with a coaxial cable. So the best of the best technique for antennas is to have an antenna tuner right on the antenna or next to the antenna. Some people for higher bands like 28 megahertz use ground plane, but it's huge. It is huge. If you have wide band antennas, which are multi-band antennas that operate in all bands, it is being called ICON Super Wideband DICON antenna. You can buy it too, and it could work on higher HF, VHF bands, but it could work also in lower bands. That one requires antenna tuner. Most of the rigs, they have antenna tuners built into the rig. So that's what I could add to it. And to exchange.
Okay, thank you very much, Wesley. I think N2EO wanted to say something as well, and we'll bring it back around to the HF question. As I said, the VHF-UHF strikes me as relatively simple. You can pretty much take what Chris said and give him the model and company name and job well done. Moving on to HF, I think is going to be fascinating. And also, Chris has written some more in the chat room, so there are some more options that are available to us, and I'll get into that soon. But N2EO, you wanted to say something?
W2AK? Yes, I'm Woodward. There's a very good antenna made by MFJ. And don't discount MFJ. They used to call it Mighty Fine Jump. It no longer is. It hasn't been for a long time. They up that quality tremendously. I own four MFJ products, and they work flawlessly. They're well put together, no more solder blocks, inside nothing. MFJ make a little bit better. They have two models. One covers 10 to, no, 10 to 20. The other model covers 15 to 40. You have your choice. They're all loop. They have capacitors at the top to resonate it, and a control box that does not use a control case. It controls the VC right to the center of the coax. And as you remember, I think you can say, a short antenna, if it resonates, you lose 5% maximum over a long antenna. So about 3 feet, it's a 3 foot loop, and you can put it horizontal or vertical on TV net. That's good for HF. It's a little pricey. It's a little over $300 for the whole package. The control unit has a built-in SWR meter. It's got memory, so you can go back where you want to go. It goes up, frequency up, frequency down. You can store the memory. The one antenna I would not buy, VHF, UHF, I forget the model number, it's a GP something or other, made by Neutronics, what they call themselves today. I forget the new name. It's very narrow band. That's the problem with it. A comet or diamond.
Repeater, timeout. Timeout. Cancel.
Where are those
points? About 30 seconds ago. I understand you were talking about different types of UHVH. I understand the magnetic loops. I like magnetic loops. I've owned magnetic loops. Magnetic loops have pluses and they have significant negatives. They are very high Q devices. So you have to retune them. You can make that somewhat painless using automated circuits and memory or just standing wave ratio bridges and other such methods. But you still have a very high Q, very small bandwidth. The one nastiest part, I think, as far as magnetic loops, is unless you have a massive tuning capacitor, because of the high Q and the high voltage that the capacitor has to deal with, you need a very sturdy capacitor. Otherwise, your transmitter's output is significantly limited. So if Chris had told me that he can't get any higher than 10 feet and he has to keep the footprint small, I would say that, well, a magnetic loop would be one of the options. But if he's telling me that he can raise it up 35 feet, and 35 feet of elevation doesn't really help magnetic loops per se, you're still stuck with all the negatives of magnetic loops.
Another problem is high voltage.
Well, boy, it has a massive capacitor, and the control box has memory. It'll take a maximum, that loop is rated for a max of 250 watts.
W2AK?
Yes, W2AK.
This is Whiskey 2 Alpha Kilo Echo George. I just wanted to inject myself briefly with regard to the VHF-UHF antennas. For 6 years now, I have been using a disc-cone antenna, fairly high-gain unit, with about 30 feet of 7/8 heliacs. And I've been talking on it as I am right now. with a Yaesu MT7900, and it has worked like a charm. I've worked ducting, I've worked Connecticut, I've worked, you know, without an issue whatsoever. We're based here in Old Bethpage.
Okay, that's very good to hear. That certainly is another option. Most people that I've known who use discones use them primarily as a receiver, but it's interesting that you're using it as both as a transceiver, transmitter, and receiver. Getting back just for a moment to N2EO's comment, these numbers don't quite make any particular sense to me. I'm looking things up, and the closest thing to a high power magnetic loop antenna is the MFJ-1788. It's quoted at $560, and it only goes up to a maximum of 150 watts, which is, you know, a lot of power for the average magnetic loop. But, you know, with a piece of wire and such, you can output a kilowatt if you're so inclined. So it does put a degree of limitation. I mean, true, Chris is going to be buying a 991A, which only puts out, I believe, 100 watts. But you never know when he might want to decide to dip his toe in the world of linear amplifiers and have an antenna that doesn't have a limitation of 150 watts. But I don't know of any MFJ magnetic loop that goes up to 250 watts.
Yeah, well, keep looking, Roy. It's in that catalog. It's in the online catalog. You'll find it. They have two models. One covers 10 to 20. The other model covers 15 to 40. Uses a capacitor, like I said, has a control box with a built-in SWR meter. And once you go to a spot where you bring down the SWR by moving your capacitor remotely, you can store it in memory.
Okay, Wesley recognized, and someone was trying to get through, and it was very broken up. So let me try and have the other person throw out his call sign one more time and throw in some phonetics. I don't know if it's an open connection in your microphone or what's causing the problem, but please ID yourself.
2D2RMD, fixed station, join.
Yes, R&D.
I don't have much for the net this evening. I just wanted to check in and join, say hello, and monitor. I will say it's nice to talk on the Sheldon repeater from my home, ICOM 746. It's the first time I've worked a repeater from my home all year. I now have an antenna for 2 meters, which I actually built myself. I'm talking on a homebrew quarter wave ground plane, and this antenna's working so nicely so far, I decided to do the same thing for 6 meters. And I got a little overzealous. I was going to make another antenna for 10 meters. But the 6-meter quarter wave ground plane, it's a lot larger than you might think. So it was a little troublesome moving it around in my attic. I mean, it wasn't really all that difficult. It just took longer than I thought. And there was an opening on 6 meters yesterday. I made a contact to on a 6-meter sideband. So I'm really just trying out this new antenna. It seems to be working quite nicely for me.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that you're having fun and exploring. That's part of the pleasure of this hobby. There are so many little nooks and crannies that you can get lost into. And, you know, if you get tired of one aspect of amateur radio, there's 10 others to take its place. So I wish you good luck and have fun. It's always interesting building radios. And nowadays, with relatively inexpensive vector network analyzers, you can sweep the frequencies and get a good feel for the resonance and how the impedance changes according to the frequency.
analyze it. So I had to do it the old-fashioned way and just give a test CQ across the entire band and write down what the SWR was. But all right, I didn't mean to change the topic to RMD. I'll be monitoring before I got to leave for work in about a half hour.
Okay, very good. So I don't know what to tell you, Antuio. The only thing I can come up with, the highest end MFJ loop I can find is the 1788 that also operates on 15 to 40 meters, and it only goes up to 150 watts. And true, as you mentioned, they do have a little memory circuits, and they can eventually get to the resonant frequency as you change the dial. I think there are other better solutions given the descriptor that Chris has given me. Again, the magnetic loop antennas are fascinating. They're very height. They're not affected by height. So if you can get them to around 10 feet of elevation from the ground, they work just as well as if you raise them up 35 feet. As Chris mentioned, he was intending for his HF antenna. But, you know, magnetic loops, I'm a fan of magnetic loops, but I tend to try to understand the limitations that they have. They are not panaceas. You pay a price. And one of the prices is the limited power output because of the variable tuning capacitor.
I may be wrong in the power. Maybe it's 150. I may be mistaken. But if you're looking at the one with the control box, that's the correct one. Also, we said money is no option. I wouldn't throw money around. I own an ICOM 7300. It's a great radio, touch screen, very easy to use, put down 100 watts, and it was $1,000 on sale. On the other hand, Yaesu makes I forget what they call it, but it comes with a monitor that you don't need, and cost $3,500. My radio can work the same station, $1,000 radio, that the $3,500 can work. I wouldn't buy something like that.
Okay, Rich, that's your option. Some people like the Yaesu 991A. It's a very pretty looking radio. The specs aren't fantastic in my humble opinion, but it's a useful radio. Your 7300, I think, is a wonderful piece of hardware. It's a software defined radio that ICOM was able to sell at a very attractive price point, and it's actually dropped in price. I think it goes for about $860 or something these days. So it's an excellent, it's though not identical in operation to a 991A. A 991A is more like the ICOM 7100, one radio in a box type of a thing. It has UHF and VHF, and as you well know, your 7300 only has HF capability. So I think in the case, again, Chris, is he would like an all-in-one solution. And true, the IC7100 is a little bit older and not as pretty as the 991A. And Yaesu has some models that also might be considered. But he has his heart on the Yaesu 991A. So we're not going to talk him out of anything that he wants because, you know, we're all adults. And if you don't have the money, then obviously you shouldn't say the price is no limit. But if the universe has been kind to you and you have some money salted away and you want to buy yourself a toy, you know, as the saying goes, the difference between men and boys are the price of the toys.
on the Diamond and the Comet. They both come your choice, N Connecticut or SO239. Don't go with an N Connecticut for a beginner. Choose the one with the SO239. And, so I'm totally happy with the 7300. What happened, boy? I paid all my bills with my Social Security check. And right after that, I got the stimulus check. That's why I bought what I bought.
Intuition.
Yes, Wesley.
Some information that could be useful for the gentleman. The site is hiqantennas.com. That would be hiqantennas.com. hiqantennas.com. And the antenna is about 2 feet tall, could be mounted at any elevation, could be mounted on a truck, on the roof, and this antenna based on a manufacturer doesn't need to have that metal plate that I was talking about. There is a picture of that antenna mounted on the roof as well. Let me jump. The antenna is called loaded coil antenna. It tunes from 1.8 to 30 megahertz in 200 milliseconds. It has a rapid tuning. It has its software control with the stepper motor. It has a silver-plated brass balls and silver-plated loading coil wire that combine friction of the contact weight. That's what it says. It's a 400% reduction in friction. And I believe that's an excellent choice. The model number of the antenna that was used as an example here was HIQ-5/80. It is reported that using that antenna, the guy on the truck got 87 countries on 80 meters, 126 countries on 40 meters, 105 countries on 30 meters, 133 countries on 20 meters, 72 countries on 17 meters, 103 countries on 15 meters, and 117 countries on 10 meters. Again, the model number for the antenna reported is HIQ-5/80. I understand that this one, because it ends with /80, is not from 160 to 10 meters. So you can go to the website and you will see also the picture of that antenna mounted on the roof as well. Again, site is hiqantennas.com. One word, hiqantennas.com. Enter it here.
Can I make a correction on that?
Go ahead.
It's hiqantennas.com.
Thank you very much. I see it in my browser as hiqantennas.com with no dash, but thank you for telling me that.
Yeah, I know. I put in hiqantennas.com and came up with nothing with a 404. So I put in HI-Q after I heard your antenna model number, and that worked.
Beautiful. Thank you very much for helping me. Oh, one more thing. I'm sorry. I look at other antenna, but the prices will range from $669 plus mount from 10 to 160. Tar Heel that would charge $858. It's a comparison with the price. What I remember, the most expensive antennas of this kind were about $1,200 for antenna, but I believe they may go down with the crisis. And also, there are not so many hams right now willing to buy good antennas. My suggestion is, if I have to spend for Chinese crap, I'd rather spend three or four times more for anything that it says made in America. And to exchange.
Okay, thank you very much, Wesley. Their website, which is highqantennas.com, no dashes, they designate these models as high-Q-Piranha-5/80. $625, kind of expensive. Basically, they're screwdriver antennas. They're excellent for mobile antennas because you can't have a full-length antenna stuck on your car and have your car last very long. So for car antennas, you pay the price for the diminished efficiency. Unfortunately, the nicest designed antennas, if you're trying to run them for 160 meters, there's going to be a lot of insertion loss in the screwdriver tuning section, and that's going to bring the efficiency down. But I do have something to add. Chris kind of added something to the mix, and I'd like to get to it in a moment. Basically, if you stuck with Chris's initial suggestion of a 10-foot high vertical, you would end up with some kind of a electronically loaded device like a ham stick that may or may not be able to be directly tuned or would be tuned by an attached antenna tuner or an antenna tuner in the shack. And again, those things don't have quite the efficiency of other models. When you shrink things down, the radiation resistance goes lower, the effect of the insertion loss has a greater effect on the total efficiency, and you're stuck with not the best antenna. But he's given us another option, and I'm going to drop for a second, and I will add this new little nuance that'll change the story entirely. Okay, he adds that he has an empty lot next door to him, and he said he could certainly string something across there. He hadn't thought of going horizontal, but that is an option. I'll ask Chris if he's listening, which I'm sure he is, what kind of dimensions is this lot? How long a piece of wire could he run there? Because that makes a big difference. If it's only 10 feet, 100 yards. Well, you could do a lot with 100 yards. So I throw it out to you guys out there. I mean, you could do a lot of things with 100 yards. My kind of first idea would be something akin to a fan dipole. Fan dipoles are very interesting yet really simple devices that have multiple lengths of wire parallel connected. Adjusted for proper resonance on different bands, and so they auto-select which wire they go through. They go through the resonant ones and radiate and leave the ones that are cut too short or too long. So I'm a big fan of fan dipoles, but with 100 yards, you could have a doublet. You could have a dipole. You could have a folded dipole. You could even have a loop, I guess. So please, if anyone has any suggestions of what Chris could do with 100 yards to make the best make the best HF antenna that he can come up with, please hit that push to talk button.
And we are
Whiskey 2 Tango Hotel Bravo.
Tango Hotel Bravo recognized. Rich recognized. Let me hear from Tango Hotel Bravo first, and then we'll get to you, Rich. Okay?
Hey, guys. guys, Stephen in Lindenhurst. I have a really small backyard here, and I ended up with an end-fed 53-foot antenna. I think I got it from T-Extreme. And the reason I went with an end-fed is because I can bring the feed point all the way to the ground, run it up as high as I can, and then put it in an inverted V using very little space. And it's all antenna, so I don't need to have the antenna high up and wide, using up all the space.
Okay, Stephen, that's a good suggestion. NFEDs, we kind of started this conversation way back discussing NFEDs. They certainly are the least painful in installing. You just really need one distant connection site. The rest is located either on your house or very close to your house. So that's a good recommendation as well. You have to watch the common mode rejection. You have to make sure that not too much RF is getting into your shack. It can have really wacky effects to computers, but that's an option. N2EO, Richie, I assume this is something different than suggesting the antenna that you've been suggesting all this time, because you've already suggested that antenna. So what do you have to say, N2EO?
I didn't know we had a big lot. The best thing is there are trees on the lot. Make a four-way loop and feed it at the end where the loop comes together. Feed it with open wire line to a tuna. I work guys on 75 every night. Those antennas come booming in. Also, you don't want to go that far. And then that step, I think you know what that is like. So I won't bring it up. M2EO.
Well, yeah, Richie. I mean, once Chris kind of mentioned the wooded area with 100 yards, it's a free for all. You could pretty much design almost anything in those dimensions. Again, I don't know if I would go esoteric. I think I would try and keep it simple for his first generation of HF. Again, I kind of think that fan dipoles are very nicely designed. So it's one of those things that you're still going to end up needing an antenna tuner. He has one on his 991A. He might be able to get away with something that tunes 3-to-1 VizWaz, although he might want to put it in the back of his wish list for some future endeavor to kind of widen out his antenna's ability to resonate. But I can't think of an antenna short of something like a Yagi or something that he couldn't put up on that 100 yards of ground. So I think it goes back to something I think Ed mentioned or Chester, I forget which, to keep it simple. I think if this is going to be your 25th antenna, you can go kludgy and esoteric and design your own or find a very remarkable, unique design. But, you know, I think if this is going to be your first one, you should stick with something tried, true, and overly tested, like some variation of a dipole. But please, if anyone has a particular favorite HF antenna that would fit in Chris's 100-yard, wooded area, please throw in your suggestion.
Comment?
Yes, please comment.
So many of us are constantly trying to figure out what the next antenna is going to be, what type of elaborate antenna can I come up with, and then so many of us have trouble with the basic antennas that we have to think outside the box, that none of us can use a simple vertical antenna. We all live in Long Island, New York. The soil beneath our feet is naturally a very good ground, and I just sunk a ground rod outside last week. I dug a hole 4 feet deep, and then I ran the next 3 feet of it with a hammer. but it was wet, soft, and moist, the ground. And you don't have to live right next, you don't have to be on the beach to take advantage of the salt water. The Frenzel, the Frenzel zone, if I'm pronouncing that right, you know, where the takeoff angle is on a vertical, where the actual takeoff angle begins, could be several wavelengths out from the base of the antenna. So if you live a couple of miles away, I think I live about 6 or 7 miles away from the Atlantic Ocean. You know, on 40 meters and definitely 80 meters and certainly 80 meters, if I had a vertical right here, I'd still be taking advantage of the salt water. So, I don't have any experience with a vertical antenna because I live in a condo, but all the research that I've done, and I read a lot of books on ham radio, especially antenna theory, it's my favorite. If you've got the room to put up a simple vertical antenna, go for it, because we have excellent ground beneath our feet. Take advantage of it. Over.
Okay, well, thanks for that insight. Different people have different, some people have sandy ground, some people have granite. It sort of still depends. I don't think Long Island is all the same as far as the foundation of it is concerned, but a vertical is an option. Again, a vertical kind of adds another layer of structural demand, especially if you're interested in 80 meters or 160 meters. Unless you're going to electronically resonate it, you're going to need a very, very, very long vertical antenna, and you're going to need support structures to hold it in place from the wind and such. So certainly a vertical is an option. I just thought it's probably a lot easier for Chris to just run some wires, have it tied to one side of, say, a tree in that area and the other to his house, and just, you know, get to transmitting.
Yeah, that reminds me for the virtual ground antennas. You take, there's a MFJ. MFJ does it. Does sell it. You take any length of the wire, just hook it somewhere, and then the other end connect to that box MFJ, and it's a virtual ground, right? And it balances, and then you go to the rig. Easy, cheap, $120, $130 for it. Let me drop. Also, I found, Dr. Roy, you mentioned the price for this HiQ antenna, but I found on that site HiQ Super Piranha 6RS Mule. It's $895 and $75 for the shipping. So they also give the prices. Enter a share.
Yes, I assume the mill is for military grade, which means that they just use more sturdy and it weighs a little bit more. Yeah, it can go up in price. But going back to the antenna that Chris is talking about, yeah, I mean, there are so many different options. There's so many different ways that you can go with something like that. You know, someone mentioned the vertical. I kind of think that the easiest approach is something simple, horizontal. Doublets are rather nice if you have an antenna tuner, but I think Chris is going to rely on his 3-to-1 internal antenna tuner from the 991A. So a fan dipole might get you to most of those frequencies, but there are other options. If you're going to go, though, with the off-center, you're probably going to need something a little bit with more adjustability than the built-in Japanese antenna tuners. You'll need something that's sort of designed for more like a 10-to-1 VISWA, although no one advertises themselves that way because they can't guarantee it, because it also depends on the phase difference in addition to the impedance. Any other closing comments on this, Wesley?
32
RMD? Yes,
RMD. Simple tune dipole. They are excellent antennas, and that's why they've been used for over 100 years. And if you think you can't fit it, just look at me. I have five dipoles in my attic, and they're all full length, including one for 80 meters. So if you put your mind to it, you can fit a dipole pretty much anywhere. And bending very little to affect the radiation pattern, and that's been proven in modeling. So, yeah, go with a dipole and go for 40 meters. That's where all the activity is.
Well, there's a lot of activity on 80 as well. You have to wait a few more hours. And this is not going to be forever. Hopefully, propagation conditions will improve. We're in the sunspot minimum. So 20 is very iffy. But eventually, 20 will become decent. And who knows, 17, 15, 10, and 6. So these things will come back eventually. So I think Chris is kind of trying to come up with a design that he could live with for at least 4 or 5 years, I might be wrong, and that will put him close to the sunspot activity where the upper bands will liven up once again. Just touching base, though, with Wesley's comment, artificial counterpoises are basically just tuning networks. What happens is counterpoise is part of the radiating aspect of an antenna. It's the other half of the seesaw, if you will. So it has to be a certain electronic length. If it doesn't have quite the length that it needs to be, you can electronically tune it with a kind of adjustable counterpoise that MFJ makes, but you introduce additional insertion losses along the way. So if you can wire up a proper counterpoise or radials, those are always better, in my opinion, than having tuned networks do the job for you.
Yeah, well... Yes, actually, that's what you said is right. There is a model number MFJ-934, Mary Frank Julian-934. It was 300 watts on 160 meters. It doesn't go more than 175 watts RF output from antenna tuner and... Well, actually, this is sort of a self-adjusting system. So artificial ground system will match any transmitter or transceiver to virtually an antenna. So any length of wire, that's what they say. A special circuit is cancelled direct answers of the ground led or counterpoise and reduce this problem caused by RF in the shock. Forward power reflected power ground current and SWR can be read on directly on the watt meter that is built into the device. So MFJ 934 use a T network that covers bands between 160 and 10 meters, which would be, I remember there was $130, something like that. These networks will work with dipoles, inverted Vs, verticals, mobile whips, beams, randoms, wires, or any other antennas. So it doesn't matter if the wire is horizontal, it's vertical, it will definitely impact the radiation pattern of the antenna, but this is not an issue here. DMFJ 984 has a rear control connectors for the coaxial and single wire or two wire feed lines. That means it's up to you how you're going to use it. Inside there is a 4-to-1 balloon that allows use of balanced open wire, twin lead or twin axial feed lines, whatever is at your convenience. There is much more in it, like explanation of SWR and watt meter that is built into the device. If you buy the option with built-in meter, enter it in.
Well, thanks, Wesley. According to MFJ's website, it's gone up to about $250. It lists at $249.95. Again, if you're kind of stuck and you're very limited and you can't supply your own real counterpoise and you have to do something because your piece of wire just is not going to tune the way it is, then I guess this is a helpful tunable counterpoise. But I think in Chris's case, he can just run some wire. It has no real insertion loss, costs nothing close to $250. And again, there's a lot of devices that solve people's problems, but I don't think any of these are necessarily going to be Chris's problem. So he'll just kind of decide upon what he would like. Again, some people suggest keeping it simple and get a dipole of some kind. You can either get a non-resonant doublet and an open wire that's relatively lossless and an antenna tuner to resonate the antenna doublet at any, almost any frequency, or a fan dipole with a series of balanced dipole legs for different optimal frequencies, or an off-center Windom or an end-fed. The sky is the limit, as it were. I hope that Chris is taking notes, or he'll listen to an archived copy of this audio and take it to heart and do a little bit more thinking about it. One of the things I think that we all kind of tell each other when we talk about antennas is you really have to fundamentally get a good sense of what bands you want to operate on. Some people are fascinated by the upper bands. They start at 20 and work their way up to 6 meters during times of good propagation, during sunspot maximums. They are magical bands. Nowadays, they're not magical at all. They're rather sad and anemic. So we still have, thankfully, 80 and 40. And some people have the capacity to run 80. Some people don't want to use that much wire and such, and so they settle for 80 and above. So you should kind of listen on a radio, get a sense for the different bands, when they're active, when they're quiet, and what bands you think you would like to be able to use, knowing that propagation conditions are not static things. They are subject to change minute to minute and over the course of the sunspot cycle.
It makes propagation and DXing so much fun.
Yes. I have heard great fish stories of guys who have worked the world on 6 meters. So I am I'm looking forward to sunspot activity and the opening up of the upper bands. I am very often the net control operator for another club's 10-meter net on Sunday mornings. And unfortunately, we're kind of talking to each other. This morning, it was the usual guys in New Jersey, Staten Island, Brooklyn, and Queens. Occasionally, we'll talk to Florida. Very occasionally, we'll talk to Arizona. But I'm hoping that as sunspot cycle improves, we're going to be talking to a lot of people we haven't talked to in a long, long time. So DXing is going to be great once the sunspots start firing up.
By the way, what antenna do you use right now for HF?
I have two antennas. I have a fan dipole that has a loading coil in it, so it goes theoretically from about 10 meters to 80. And I have a vertical 5/8 wave for 10 meters. It's a Spanish design called Sirio. I think it's Italy. Italian design called Sirio 2016. It has a very nice takeoff angle because of its 5/8 wave design. So I have two. I have them hooked up both on my software-defined radio so I can listen to my vertical in one ear and my horizontal in the other if I'm on 10 meters.
Is it in the last model of software-defined radio that you're using, or you just stay with what you had before.
They haven't really improved the technology that much over the last 7 years. The Flex radio is still selling my model, the 6700. It's still the top of the line. It has the ability to present eight virtual receivers simultaneously. You can only transmit on one of them at a time, obviously, but